carnal weapons. I mean the weapons of plague and famine, the weapons of dearth and frost, and the weapons of blood and fire and pillars of smoke. And the words that cut, the words that kill. Because words can kill. And so the word of God is sharper than any two-edged sword. The word of God can kill. It can divide your soul from your spirit. You know what that means? That means death. It can actually slice you apart, right down to the soul and spirit. Not a mark on him. Now they come out to him as if he's a thief, to take him with swords and staves like he's going to fight. I was with you there in the temple all the time. You could have grabbed me then. This is a bit of a jab at them, obviously, because he knew they feared the people. You stretch no hands against me, but this is your hour, the hour of darkness, the power of doing things when no one can see. That's the power of darkness. The power of darkness is the power that enables people to do things when no one's looking. Things they wouldn't do when there were eyeballs on them, they will suddenly do when the dark of night has come. This is your hour, the hour and the power of darkness. The deeds done when no one's around, the deeds done in darkness. That is their time. How many today? What are your deeds done in darkness? And the power of darkness is powerful. You know, the power of darkness is this. Who sees me? Who knows me? And Peter following, verse 55. And when they had kindled a fire in the midst of the hall and were set down together, Peter sat down among them. But a certain maid beheld him as he sat by the fire and earnestly looked upon him and said, this man was also with him. And he denied him, saying, woman, I know him not. And after a little while, another saw him and said, thou art also of them. And Peter said, man, I am not. And about the space of 1 hour after, another confidently affirmed, saying, of a truth, this fellow also was with him, for he is a Galilean. As I said in another gospel, your speech betrays you. And Peter said, man, I know not what thou sayest. You know, imagine if Jesus had taken all his disciples from Alabama. Except, you weren't in Alabama no more. You're in upper Minnesota. I just threw that out. You know, you're in Minnesota, you know, and then all of a sudden, like, there's no, you know, funky accents around there. And all of a sudden, they're like, you sound like one of his disciples. They all had that twang from Galilee. And Peter said, man, I know not what thou sayest. In the other Gospels, the details recorded that he began to curse and swear. Curse himself and to take oaths. I swear I do not know him. By heaven, I do not know him. If I know him, let a curse come upon me. That's what it means to curse and swear. To swear you take oaths by something greater than yourself. And curses, you invoke powers to come and destroy you. If what you're saying is not true. To curse and to swear. That's entirely different than our understanding of profanity and foul language. Which is asked as truly profanity. Meaning, because profane, it is common. You know, what we consider profane words are the things that all humanity has in common. Bowel movements. Intercourse. Urination. And words that pertain to those things. The most guttural terms, we consider that to be profanity. Because the word profane literally means that which is common or unsacred. Continuing in verse 60. And immediately while yet spake, the cock crew. Verse 61. And the Lord turned and looked upon Peter. And Peter remembered the word of the Lord, how he had said unto him, before the cock crow, thou shalt deny me thrice. And Peter went out and wept bitterly. Now there was some, I know there's discrepancy in the Gospels regarding the details of that. As far as one says, before the cock crow twice, thou shalt deny me thrice. And those details, I don't know. Like I said, I've said this before, I don't really look to the Bible to be miraculously, I don't look for a small miracle in the book. I believe the things that are said. And the men who said them were inspired. If in a detail here or a detail there, as they were making their gospels, they weren't really colluding with each other. And the degree of similarity between the accounts is remarkable. What it shows is, God isn't using automatic writing to dictate four perfect accounts. What he uses is four men and inspires them all to write about the things which they know are true. And they all come out pretty much the same. It's not about the details of who did what, when, and where, and what exactly was said, but the ideas. Like when Luke gives portions of the Sermon on the Mount, he may have heard like certain parables 50 times, or certain bits of doctrine 50 times. Like when Jesus says something like, men's hearts failing them for fear and for looking after those things which are coming on the earth, and the powers in heaven shall be shaken. He had maybe said those similar words 50 times. And Luke is giving his regurgitation of what he learned from Christ. This is something he said. Like I said, there was no stenographer present as these things happened. They happened organically, but the men were inspired by God's Spirit. And the reason I put my trust in that is because I have received God's Spirit. So I trust the apostles' account. And I think there's good reason to believe their account. Let's say you don't believe the Bible is a miracle, but then look at the way they wrote, and considering, they definitely weren't colluding, how accurately they were transmitting the teachings of Christ. If you want to be a Christian, you basically have to accept the apostles. They were the men whom God appointed, who Jesus appointed. And it really doesn't do any good when you start questioning it. Then where do you go? If you don't want to listen to the first-hand accounts, and the Gospels, they always say, they weren't written until 200 or 300 years later. That's not true. That's like a lie that's been around there, going around forever. They say that. But it's not true. The Gospels were written by Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and John, men who lived and walked with Christ. Luke, I'm not sure where he was during the ministry of Christ, because like I said, his is sort of like a composite gospel from interviews and from first-hand evidence to eyewitnesses. Now, he was an eyewitness of many of the things happened, but as far as his status as an original disciple is in question. But, there are different, you have Matthew, an apostle, Mark, one of the disciples from very early, a young man. Luke, a physician, an educated man,